Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. My guest today is Jason Cutter. Jason is a mindset and scalability expert and the CEO of Cutter Consulting Group. Even though he didn't have a sales upbringing or background, his bachelor's degree is in marine biology, he knows what it takes to be successful in sales and build profitable teams. His books, podcasts, and work with clients are focused on helping close more deals, make more money, and produce scalable results. Thanks so much for joining me today, Jason.
Thanks for having me here, Diane.
I'm thrilled to have you here. Just a little quick little aside for the listeners. You and I met, last year, the year before, through an online networking thing, and had contact back and forth, and then sort of lost contact and ended up getting reacquainted. And the reason I say that is because, folks, you never know where different connections and relationships are going to take you when you are simply looking to build relationships. So that's my little, little non-sales pitch.
I totally agree, right? Like that's the, one of those things. If you're playing the long game and you're focused on relationships, like we can talk about sales, we can talk about life in general, which everything in life is sales. So it's all intertwined. When you're playing the long game, you're just planting seeds and you just never know. I had a mentor that said, what he focuses on and what everyone should focus on is planting seeds that might grow up to be trees that you'll never sit under either, right? Like you never know what things are going to grow or nurture, what you're going to do for somebody or with somebody, that it will turn into something that you'll never even see the fruits of. If you're attached to needing to see the results or getting something out of it,
that
give to get mentality, that's, anyway, we're already getting off topic here, but or not.
Well, we are and we aren't. So, because we're going to be talking about sales, right? So, all of this, plays in. And I am curious about something that you and I both see a lot, which is people being order takers instead of salespeople. And I would love to get your take on why you think that happens.
Yeah. And I know partially you're referencing the book that I wrote where that was the subtitle, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. Why does it happen? Well, in my experience, and I will talk from my own personal experience if we want, typically what happens is somebody enters into a sales role or a role where they should be persuading and moving people forward to some kind of end result that then generates revenue, right? A lot of people won't want to say they're in sales. They don't have a title that's sales. Companies give people titles of anything but salesperson, right? Look at account executive. I'm using air quotes, but it's really a sales role, but nobody wants to admit it. And the reason why is sales is gross. Sales is full of the old school tactics that people don't like. I've in the US and then also overseas with teams that I've done in training, I say used car salesman, and then everyone can come up with a pretty accurate same description of what that looks like. And so people think that is sales. And so what happens is somebody enters in a role where they should be selling, they should be persuading, they should be helping people, but they think sales is that, right? They think that sales is gross. They think that sales requires lying, cheating, tricking people, manipulating, using tactics, strategies, all kinds of things that ultimately benefit the salesperson, but not to benefit the customer. And that's what people think sales is. So they enter into a role and then they think, oh, that's sales. I don't want to do that. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to follow the golden rule and I'm going to treat people like I want to be treated. So I'm just going to be nice. I'm going to be friendly. I'm going to build rapport. I'm going to show people that I care. And then I'm going to hope they like me enough and trust me enough. And then they buy from me because I don't want to do any of those things that I think sales equals. And so they end up in that role. And so that's one mode. That's what happened to me. That's what happened to me in sales and a lot of my career path in sales until I figured out what it really meant. And then the other reason that people end up being order takers is their company just fails them. They hire people, they throw them on the phones, or they throw them into a role. They don't give them any training, or they only teach them about the product. And they say, here's what you're supposed to go sell. Now go sell it. And they think, all right, if I hire 10 people, if one or two of them figure it out, that's great. I'll just fire the rest and keep hiring people and firing people until I have a team. And there's a lot of carnage that goes through that. And people don't actually get any training. And then they default to the first reason I said.
Got it. Boy, it's so expensive for companies to do that in so many ways.
Yeah, for sure. And it's expensive too, right? And everyone knows the stats of like how much it takes to replace somebody and what you're paying for that. It could be $10,000. It could be $150,000, a 1 year salary or revenue from a salesperson, all those things. But what it's also doing too, in this day and age right now, which is where it's really hurtful for companies, is that customers aren't going to tolerate that either. Customers aren't going to tolerate turnover. They're not going to tolerate your poorly trained sales reps. They're not going to tolerate your order takers, because unless your name is Apple, there is another company out there who does exactly what you do and is happy to do a better job at it. Apple has no competition when it comes to iPhones. There's one iPhone. They have the monopoly. That's why you stand in line. That's why you put up with their terrible service. That's why you pay their prices, because you want an Apple phone, right? Not all smartphones, but if you want an Apple, an iPhone, you only have one choice. But out there in the real world, for the rest of us, there's somebody else who will happily help your client in a way that you're not, because they're not going to tolerate it anymore.
Okay, but let's talk about that. What is it that most consumers actually want from a salesperson these days?
Oh, another loaded question. I feel like I'm just going to keep monologuing our time together. So here's the big thing, and it always helps to go backwards and then go forwards, I think, for people to really like understand it, is not too long ago, I will say back in the day, if you wanted to buy something and you wanted to learn about something that you wanted to buy, you had to call a company or you had to go into a store. There wasn't another choice. We're talking pre-internet. Some of us, like you and I, remember what it was like before the internet. When you wanted to figure out where a company was at, you had to get the phone book out and then call them and then write down the directions and then drive to their place. And then the fun part began, because, it wasn't too long ago, if you wanted to buy a car, you had no idea what you're doing unless you waited for the Sunday paper. You had to go into a dealership, and then it was now the game began, right? Now the battle ensued, where it's you versus them. The salesperson's trying to sell you whatever they can and make the most amount of money, and you're trying not to get fleeced in the process and still get a car that you want. And so the salesperson and the company had all the power and had all the power and felt like they had it. So you were at the whim of them and their game and what they were doing. Okay. Then you fast forward to now everybody, and if we were on video, you would see within arm's reach of everybody 24/7, even though we all know that we shouldn't have it next to us while we're sleeping, we have access to all the world's information and knowledge. Right. And so the problem is that companies still think their job is to help people with information and knowledge and basically lecturing them or telling them things. But that's not true. People now, and they always wanted it, but they didn't have a choice. Now people have knowledge and information. They have access to it. Not everyone researches things and looks it up, but they could. What they're truly looking for and why they're risking life and limb in dealing with a salesperson, again, because most people in their minds think sales are is dangerous as a customer because of their own experiences, family, friends, other things they've seen, movies they've watched, right? You watch Wolf of Wall Street and Boiler Room, and you're going to be afraid of salespeople all day, every day. And so what happens is if somebody's willing to risk what could happen to them by talking to you, the salesperson, they are truly looking for guidance. They don't need knowledge. They don't need information. They're not looking for a lecture. They don't need someone to give them features and benefits and reading from the brochure. They want to know, how can this product or service help me get to the better place that I want to get to? How can this help my situation? Not everybody, but me. And they want that wisdom and guidance for them.
Got it. People really need to listen to that. I think that is huge. They don't want to be educated. They want guidance.
Yeah. And right? I think it's important to know that you do want to do some educating. Depending on what you sell, people might not know what it is. If it's a program or something they've never heard about. So there's some,
but isn't that dependent on the person you're talking to?
It's dependent on the person you're talking to. It depends on how much people might know. That's going to be facilitated by actually asking questions and figuring it out, instead of what most salespeople do, which as soon as they start talking to someone, they go into selling mode. They just start talking and monologuing and lecturing because they just think they're the hero and they've got the perfect solution. Instead, the other person needs to know that you care about them and that you actually want to help them get to a better place.
Right. Yeah. Well, and isn't part of the problem that their sales managers are telling them to go out and do that?
So here's Diane, you're killing me with the questions. And, or these are great, but like that's the exact scenario that happens. Cause what I see a lot in companies is companies, just going back to the order taker question, companies don't do a lot of training and don't do a lot of continuing education. They don't do a lot of helping people understand why sales is different now, what their role is, right, in that guide mode and sharing wisdom. And they just default to the classic tactics. So companies aren't doing a lot of training. They're hiring people and they're hoping they can find, air quotes, natural born salespeople who just know what to do. Just give me a phone and a list and I don't need a script. Just let me do what I do best, right? They're hoping to find those people. Those people make it evolutionarily in the company, because the other ones die off because they're not getting the support that they need. Then the company promotes that person into a management role, into a leadership role. And then what happens is that person now as a manager says, well, this is how I see the world. This is how I was successful. So I just assume everyone sees the world like this. And I think everyone should be successful in the same way. And so this is what we're going to continue to do. And just generation after generation, that organization is focused on that thing. And there's a lot of carnage. I've seen companies be successful enough. They're profitable. They make money. Are they sustainable? Are they scalable? Can they do it long-term? That's a different matter.
It is interesting because a lot of times I look at these companies and I think, boy, you know, I wonder how long this ride's going to last, because at some point, you know, it's just not sustainable.
Yeah. And it might be sustainable long-term, but what are the ups and downs going to do, and how difficult is that going to be, and how sustainable is that in the time being, right? When the slumps happen, what is that going to do to the organization, to the culture, to everybody? And can you pull yourself out of enough of those long-term?
Right. Exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcast, and now available on YouTube.
Okay, now you said something a minute ago that prompted me when you said, you know, companies hope that they get this natural born salesperson. So is there really such a thing? And if there is, does that mean people can't be taught how to sell, or, you know, what's your view?
Well, first, Diane, I am living proof that someone can make themselves into a salesperson and can be taught that. So that's the first part. The second part for your original question about natural born salespeople, I think there's definitely some personality traits that lend themselves better to being in a sales role. Now, the ones that are the classically thought about ones, which is charisma, extroversion, you know, the outgoing, the storyteller, the life of the party, the no fear, those kind of things. Yes, that's what can make somebody in that classic mode of sales. But I would contest that now, and maybe not ever, that's not necessarily what people are looking for, right? That somebody who's trying to buy something might not enjoy dealing with that kind of salesperson. They might put up with it. They might want what they want so bad that they're willing to tolerate it. I have tolerated some salespeople like that. And I've also walked away from being a customer with people like that, where I'm just like, no, this is not the game I want to play. And I don't enjoy any of this. But I think what it is, there's some of those traits. I think really when it comes to this natural born salesperson, it's not so much that they were born with the gift to sell. It's that they were born with the personality traits that lend themselves better for sales, and they realized it early on, meaning that this is the person where you can see them now at 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old. They're great at persuading. They're great at talking, not just like putting their foot down and like demanding to get their way. Like, they have persuasive arguments at 4 or 5 years old, why they need that cookie, or why they want to do this, or why they want to stay up late. And you're like, if that person's not in sales or a lawyer, it's going to be like a crime against where they could go with their life, right? We all know that. We've all seen that kid. Maybe you were that kid. And so the thing is that if you fast forward from 5 years old to now, you see that person at 25 years old, it's not that they were naturally born to be in sales. They've just been working on it and practicing, and they've been talking themselves into and out of situations for 20 years, right? If you're familiar with Malcolm Gladwell and the book Outliers, 10,000 hours principle to be a master at something, they've mastered it. They've been doing it for 20 years, right? That's been their life. Yeah. And now it's just autopilot for them. And so I think that's really more of what is. If anyone's familiar with Gary Vee was selling people the flowers out of their own front yard. He would rip them out and then knock on their door and sell them their own flowers back to them at like 6, 7, 8 years old. So you see him now at 46 years old, he's been doing it for a long time, right? Yes, he had some natural talents in there, but he's been cultivating them like a professional athlete for a very long time. Now, on the flip side of that is someone like myself. I was a shy, awkward, only child. I was bullied. I'm a late bloomer. I'm still a late bloomer. I'm still a little slow in some things sometimes with trends and stuff. I didn't fit in anywhere. My parents, two fantastic, loving parents, they're still together to this day, analytical. My mom was in banking and finance before she retired. My dad was an engineer and project manager and moved his way up before he retired. Two analytical parents. My mom hated salespeople as a banker. And so I was not great with people and raised to hate salespeople and fear them. So I literally got my bachelor's degree in marine biology. I tagged sharks for years because, as I say now, it's kind of a punchline. It was safer to stand on a boat being circled by great white sharks than any career dealing with humans. That's literally what my brain was telling me at that time in my life. And yet life took the directions it did. I fell into sales at 27. I didn't get my first sales job. I was an order taker because the mortgage industry was hot in 2002. So there was no sales required. I didn't learn sales until years later. And I basically worked on the skills and the personality traits and the behaviors and the ways to sell in a way that was successful, having none of those in my favor early on.
Well, thank you so much for that. It's both sides of it. And so the answer is that some people are born with tendencies and traits that lend themselves towards being good salespeople. And other people learn those traits and characteristics so that they can be good salespeople. Yes?
Yep. And hard work and the desire to be successful will outwork, will beat out pure talent all day.
Yeah.
Right. If we look at somebody who's athletic or somebody who's musically inclined, but lazy, like they have some natural talents, they just don't want to work on it. They could be amazing versus somebody who's got enough and then they put in the effort and they will blow somebody else away. That's why I firmly believe that you can make yourself into a sales professional if you want to.
Right. Right. I totally get that. Now, there's this belief, and I still hear it even today. In fact, I think the other day I heard it and I just, you know, some things I decide to let go. It's not worth the conversation. But since I have you here with me, I'm very interested in getting your viewpoint on this. What do you feel about this idea of asking for the sale?
So that's always an interesting topic. And if you listen to a lot of the, stuff that's out there, the advice is how to ask for the sale, ways to close the sale, ways to do this, ways to do that. That's really about like getting to the point where you can then ask for the sale. And a lot of it is based on old school tactics. Some of it's based on people don't like to be sold to, they like to buy. So you're asking their permission so that they feel like they're in control. So they're buying, right? And so that's the general advice and the general themes that are out there. I look at it differently. And I'll use an analogy, you know, kind of something, a scenario that people can imagine. So let's imagine that you break your arm, okay? You go to the ER, they get you in after however long they make you wait. And the doctor goes through their process. They do an x-ray, they do some exam work, they check things out, they come back and they say, you have a spiral fracture in your arm. We need to re-break it. We need to reset it. That's going to hurt. Put a cast on it. We'll get you some medicine. I'm sure you need to think about it. So what I'm going to do is here's a brochure on broken arms. Here's my business card. I'll send you a follow-up email because I'm sure there's people that you need to talk to. Maybe you need to check with somebody else. Also, if you decide to get this done by the end of the quarter, we're doing a 10% discount where we can do it and give you some money off. And so is that something you would be interested in doing? Like, that would be terrible. And in fact, that would actually be malpractice because a doctor is actually a professional. They took an oath, the Hippocratic Oath. And that would be absolutely ridiculous if they were to do that. And they would never do that. They would say, do you have any questions? But they wouldn't do that, right? And instead, what would they do? As a professional who took an oath, who's required by a board of ethics and codes and laws to leave people, you know, in a better place than they found them, they would instead come back with the diagnosis, your arm is broke, we need to reset it, put in a cast, it's going to hurt. Any questions before we begin? No? Okay. We'll get you out of here as quickly as possible. I know this is going to hurt. We'll get you some meds and then we'll book an appointment to see you in 6 weeks, right? That's what they do. They assume you came to them, you have a problem. They know what the problem is. They've now diagnosed it. They're a professional. They've given you the prescription as a professional. Now the next step is just solving it. They don't say, oh, you have this headache. Would you like medicine for it? No, you're there. You need help. They're a professional. Now, here's the thing, and this is where people try to start pushing back, is most people aren't selling something that's life or death or something where somebody is just begging for the help and they know that they can do it. However, if you want to be a professional in sales, then you have to have the same mindset. I do not believe in asking for the sale, asking someone to sign up for whatever it is that I'm focused on helping them with. That's different from earning the right to sell. That's different from earning the permission to move forward with the close. So you have to have a process where, like a doctor, you're going from step A to step B to step C and getting to the point where now here's your issue. We're going to fix it. Any questions before we begin? And so I think that's different. And that's really what people are looking for. Back to one of your first questions, which is people, all of us, because we're all customers in our own lives. We're looking for a guide. We want wisdom. We want someone to help us. I'm going to you because I want you to help me. If you're asking me what I should do, wait a second. Do you not know what I should do? Because I already know I don't know what I should do, because that's why I'm coming to you. So if you're asking me, now I'm worried, because if you don't know, what am I doing here? Like, why are we even talking? And then it's like, who's the professional and who's in control of this process, and who's the one who's actually going to help who?
Right. I love that. That is so interesting. And I'm really glad that you said the thing about getting to the point where you have permission, right? You just don't bulldoze your way through it. It's about building that relationship. And one thing that I always say is, if you're asking enough of the right questions and you're having a meaningful conversation, you're both getting to the same conclusion at the same time. So there's no closing the sale. There's just moving forward.
It is. I mean, and if you have a process that's built in the right way, that understands human behavior and psychology from the consumer standpoint, not your salesperson focused on hitting your quota mode, but the other person, which is what I help companies with and part of what I do, then you get to a natural point in the conversation as a guide where, okay, based on your situation, this looks like this is going to be the best thing to help you with fill in the blank here. Wouldn't you agree? Yes. Okay. Right. The next part is the application. What's your address? Like, it just, now we're just moving. And I also, it's funny because I train people to look at it, especially breaking the order taker mode out of people and helping them realize what their job is, and sales is service, is seeing that, you know, the doctor analogy, but that one's tough because sometimes people are like, well, I'm not selling that. I'm selling people and helping them with their energy or their cable bill, and it's not life or death. So that's a little tough. The other end of the spectrum is more almost DMV mode, right? And I tell people, I said, I want you to kind of think about it like the DMV, but definitely not be that unhappy, like be the happy person there. But it's basically, you go to the DMV because you need something. I need to register my car. They give you forms. Then they say, okay, how are we going to pay for this? Like, it's a process because they're enrolling you. They don't get a commission. They don't get a benefit. They don't care. They have so many people in line. They literally don't care what you do, but they're there to help you. At some level, as a salesperson, that's how it should also feel. I care about you. I want to help you. There's so many other people in line. If you don't sign up, that's on you, but I will help you and we'll just move forward. And I'm going to assume if we're talking, it's because I'm here to help you.
I think that's really hard for salespeople to, and small business owners, to really embrace the idea that if not this prospect, there will be another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have this, so, you know, I got to make this sale. I got to close this deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that scarcity mindset can be really difficult. And part of the problem is that exudes consciously and subconsciously out into the world or in the conversation with the other person. And when you have that mode, it can be palpable. Right? Like, I think we've all been customers or non-customers in a situation where the salesperson or the solo business owner, solopreneur is needing the sale almost more than we need to buy. And you can feel it. It's like that person who's, you know, desperately single and they don't realize that because they're so desperately single, it's actually repelling everyone away because it's just not working. Right.
Exactly.
But it's tough. It's tough to step back and trust from abundance. The best thing, and I wrote about this in my book, The Selling with Authentic Persuasion, is to just do some math, right? I'm an analytical guy. We already talked about that, right? Like I didn't think I was going to be in sales. So I just look at it analytically, like as a business owner, or even as a salesperson, I have all my reps do this, is how many people out there are your potential customers in the world, in the country, in your city, in the whatever, right? Do the math. That's the potential. Now, out of those, how many do you need each year and for how many years to be wildly successful, to be very happy financially, business-wise, whatever that looks like for you, right? And then work that number down to maybe the month. And now take that number of how many people you actually need to sign up divided by the total population of everyone that you could sell to. I promise that number is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. Then you realize, wait a second, I don't need every single person I talk to. I just need the ones who I can really help. And then if I can really help them, game on, right? That's when I need to move them forward.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't need to force every single person through. I mean, I've had people do that where we help people with credit card debt. And you look at the numbers and there's 100 million people in the US with credit card debt. And I talked to a salesperson. I'm like, if you can help two people a day, that's amazing. Two people a day, even if your career is 10 years long out of 100 million people. And even if I had a team of 100 people doing that all at the same time, it's still a fraction of a nothing, right? And so you just keep going, right? You don't have to try to choke every person into a client.
And please don't.
And please don't. It doesn't work. And even if you, and so here's the thing, right? On the other side is the people who do that, right? Not the physical choking part, because that's bad, but they just force it and they manipulate or they trick or they beg or they plead or they, like, I've seen it all. What happens is you might win the battle today. They might sign up with you either out of desperation, out of fear, out of something, or the charm, the magic dust you sprinkle on them and they just kind of don't see the BS. But you will lose the war because tomorrow they will wake up and out of the trance and they will go, oh crap, what did I sign up for? What did I buy? Right. I need to take this back, or I need to cancel, or I need to stop my credit card or cancel this check. And I've seen all of that too. And so it doesn't work long-term either.
No, it doesn't. It's amazing. Oh my gosh, Jason, I knew I was going to enjoy this conversation and I did. And so thank you so much for joining me today. Will you tell the listeners how they can find you, how they can get your books, you know, everything they need to know, please?
Well, let's start with finding me. So I'm on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. I have a business page there. Easiest place to start is if people go to jasoncutter.com. So I basically made that a hub for everything I have, for salespeople, for managers, owners, leaders. There's two different sides of the page that just has curated content and directions for where to go. I have some eBooks out there as well that people can sign up for and get those for free. So jasoncutter.com is the best place to go. For the book, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, if you go to the website, you can get that directly from me, or if you'd rather, it's on Amazon as hard copy. Also, it's on Audible, which was a fun experience recording that. So that's available if you like the audio for that. And other podcast content, jasoncutter.com is the best place to go.
Awesome. Thank you so much. As I said, I really appreciate it. I know this is very valuable for the listeners, as are your books, so they should go get them. Listeners, thank you. You are who we're doing this for. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious. And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.